welcome to the July 20th edition of In the Moment Tech Radio. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer your questions. In the Sioux Falls studio, we have Lemon Lee's John T. Meyer. Hello, John.
Hey, how's it going?
Just a short jaunt down the road.
Actually, yeah, it's a nice little walk. It's a good day. We're on 4th, so Lemon Lee is on 11th. So yeah, just a little 7-block walk.
It's a bit of a jaunt for you,
nah.
But that's okay. You're close. From Exigent Solutions, Chief Security Officer Amos Aesop is here.
Hey,
Amos.
How you doing?
Good to see you again.
Good. You?
I am well.
Good.
Thank you.
I'll say the light in here is so much better than what we're used to.
What we're used to, yeah.
We made that comment 2 weeks ago, too, that it was very dungeon-y.
Well, I think you've come even further from the place, the studio I was in. I remember Joel said it used to be in like a basement, right?
Yeah, that's no growing mushrooms here, that's for sure. Yeah, exactly. And from the Bureau in Pierre, Jeff Litterick, the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications, that is. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
How's things in state government there?
Going along, getting ready for rally, and very gloomy today, so.
Now, how does state government, specifically the IT department, get ready for the rally?
There's so much data.
Yeah, just we like could go on usage. For a full hour about all the different aspects we have to do between temp sites, temp cell towers, and all the DOT stuff that goes on, all the extra work they have to put in for traffic flows and all that kind of stuff. We prepare for months for a rally on the IT side long before it starts. So,
think high-definition cameras and many of them and data.
And is this for South Dakota Public Broadcasting?
Safety? No, this would be for public safety, DPS.
Okay.
Highway Patrol.
Sure.
And, of course, there's layers of county. I'm sure there's a bunch of civil defense and other things layered in there. In fact, I know there is.
Yeah.
But there's just a massive amount of data that moves around.
We actually have to increase all our bandwidth at all our sites out there this time of year, just to meet the demand, and then we lower them again because they're just not that busy the rest of the year. So yeah, rally is a big thing for state government as a whole, in fact. So
yeah. So this is a listener interactive program. If you've got a question, we'll try to provide those answers. If you're Facebook tolerant, that page is simply facebook.com/techradio. You can post your comments or questions there. Don't be shy. You can send us a text. It's 956-SDPB. Text 956-7372. And our phone number, we still have one of those, 800-524-3604, if you'd like to talk to us via voice. Twitter users, send those questions to @KentSDPB. And of course, the email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. That is something we could probably talk about sometime as Sturgis Tech. Because there's, it just goes just beyond the webcams.
Yeah. I'd have to learn more. I don't know as much. I think what you're talking about is any event in 2018 that has a significant amount of people comes with technical challenges, because everyone has a device, at least one, probably multiple, and they all want to be documenting and taking photos and streaming and checking in and all those
up with work.
Yeah, all that stuff, right? And so I just think any time that you're in, a stadium, so athletics, a gathering, a concert, I mean, so that's kind of just the status quo, but there's even startups that are emerging now that are specifically at concerts are creating ways to have no tech experiences. So there's this company, I can't remember the name, but like you get a sealed bag when you enter a concert, and some of it's artist driven where artists are like, I don't want you to stream my new concert. I make all my money doing live concerts. I don't want it to all be on the internet. But it's almost swinging back the other way where some people are saying like, no, live in the moment. Don't live it through your phone. We're actually going to require you to seal your device and then we'll give you back this bag I don't know how you might know more from a technical standpoint, how you can just basically create like a no data zone or like a bubble over a place where your phone doesn't work
they'd still be able to use the local portion of it, right?
Sure.
I mean, they'd still be able to do that. They wouldn't be able to live stream stuff, but I actually did also hear about this deal with putting it in a bag,
yeah,
and then they seal it up with a button or a clip similar to what like keeps you from stealing clothing.
Yeah,
from
so
a
you
store.
Know it's safe. Yeah,
right. But you could keep the phone on you all the time.
You just can't get it out.
You just can't get it out without it. Yeah, you just can't get it out.
Whatever, sure.
But when you leave, then you go buy this little device that allows you to unlock that bag. So you never leave your phone, but you don't have access to it, and it can't see anything or hear anything. Well, maybe you could hear things, but it was an interesting technology. Yeah. I thought Bruno Mars was the instance that I happened to be reading about.
Sure.
But it's an interesting, and his focus was, live in the moment, be here with other people. Don't be holding your iPad Pro up in the air that other people can't see anything, sort of deal, you know? So I thought it was an interesting technology, too.
Yeah, if you're listening, taking pictures with your iPad is not cool. Just making sure everyone knows that, because I've had to explain that to my mom today. I think she's not listening, so I can say that.
I don't think enough people understand that.
I've seen it done, though. Jeff, did you have something you wanted to mention?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting on those dead spots, because you can't really do it from a cellular perspective, because that gets you in a federal prison to create any cell dead zones. So, it's just like Amy said, you have to kind of lock the phones away and stuff. And the problem is kind of moderation. Would it be so bad if people took one or two pictures with their iPad during a concert, but they want to video and keep it up all the time? Mm-hmm. Even with phones and stuff. I mean, I'm not one against using phones, but if you have your phone in your hand and you look at it the whole time, why did you even come to the concert or event? It's all about moderation, I think. But
And I think you're seeing that as a wider trend in entertainment and sports in our society. So I think these teams either have to, a lot less people are going to games, right? Because the ticket prices are expensive now with HDTV. I would almost rather watch an NFL game from my couch, drinking a beer or having snacks, versus than paying the, $80 ticket plus parking plus traffic and then sitting in the upper deck, right? And so teams and sporting events have to find ways to capture people in the moment, even possibly with their devices. Like I've heard MLS is doing a really great, really great job of this down in Kansas City. The Sporting KC, their team is, which is in the Sprint Center or whatever that soccer stadium is called, because it's in Kansas City. And they do a bunch of, in-game texting or polling or get your phone out, and then you see the results of the poll on the device, using tech in the stadium to create an experience that only you get if you're there. Because as far as watching games, it's better to do it on TV now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, that's true of almost any event. I go to BlizzCon. I've gone to BlizzCon. I've done the virtual ticket and watched it. You actually learn more and have a slightly better experience of watching the event or getting what the event's going on through the TV versus being there and being, in the nosebleed seat where you can't really see anything. But there's certain things that you need to experience that you can only experience when you're there, and that's what they really need to amp, is that experience that, hey, if you're here, you're going to get experience you just can't get on TV. Yes, you may be able to follow a game better, but you're going to have a funner time at the stadium.
Jeff, let me ask you this. So I saw that, and I'm still kind of learning, and I'm trying to dive into esports a little bit more. The Overwatch League, the championship was just broadcast last weekend, I believe, on ESPN.
And actually, first season,
I read that it didn't get great ratings, but of course it probably just killed it on Twitch and YouTube. And so we were talking about streaming before the show started. Do you think that esports will ever be on mainstream TV, or is it almost just jump TV and we'll just live on online?
Well, it kind of depends, because it already is. The problem is it doesn't get much advertising. I mean, esports in terms of Counter-Strike and Street Fighter tournaments have been on a couple of the cable channels every Friday or Saturday night for a couple of years now. And they're on most of the night when they're having tournaments. Overwatch, they just broadcast the grand finals. And that was really the playoffs was the first time they broadcast it. On Twitch, the entire season, because they've been playing for weeks with multiple games a week, playing every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, it's the number one viewed channel, period, or close to it. It's amazing how much. And when you realize how much money is behind all this stuff, the people backing this think it's here to display. I mean, the top prize in the Overwatch League for the team was $1 million.
Yeah.
The people that own these teams have to agree to pay their player salaries guaranteed of, $60,000 to $70,000 a year for every player they have, even if they don't play, and a whole bunch of different stuff. And I'm going to just put this out. The owners of most of the teams are the people who also own NFL teams.
Yeah.
Okay. And they're expanding. Paris is coming on. There's at least 3 to 4 more cities coming on worldwide in this next season that will be starting. And the next big thing for the Overwatch League is there's going to be an all-star game here coming up in the end of August. And then there'll be probably something at BlizzCon too. It's big. It's humongously big in the circles. And then next year, Disney is going to broadcast every single game, from what I understand, and the playoffs and the Grand Series. So someone's starting to believe in it.
Jeff's our resident expert, but we could probably do an episode in the future just on esports if we all do a little bit more of our homework. I think it would be interesting. We should break it down.
I'm not going to say that I haven't watched it.
It's not embarrassing to say you've watched it.
No, I've just always been of the mind that I'd rather play than.
Agreed.
Watch.
Agreed.
Because I know I'm okay. I'm old and slow, and I'm always going to be disadvantaged. I mean, it's just like adding latency. I just tell people, look, I've got higher latency than you do. I just don't have the reaction time that the kids do on the really Twitch games. You know, where you gotta you really gotta be fast and serious combinations of moves. And keyboard hits at the same time. Really, I'm not that kind of a person.
Well, and on Twitch, you have people streaming. You know, like go back to the ones I was great at, like Madden 94, or
right.
You know, like James Bond GoldenEye. Like the people stream on those old retro games too.
Oh man, okay. Well, I got to give that a shot sometime. But I'm more of a I'd rather just play myself. But I can see the appeal. I have watched. Because I used to be a Counter-Strike player back. I used to play a little competitive Counter-Strike back in the day, and I still appreciate what they're doing.
I think that's the initial barrier, especially even calling it esports, because you're like, you think, okay, wait, video games. Wait, why would I watch someone play video games? I've played video games before. I've played a computer. So I think there's a little bit of barrier, but it is happening. People are doing it. Jeff's exactly right. If you follow the money, people are making lots of money, and it's going to keep growing.
Oh. And one thing, Overwatch, you may not have heard of it, but it is one of the biggest games out there. In fact, just for abusive, they just banned 480,000 accounts willy-nilly, and that didn't even really change the numbers. And a lot of people just watch, and I watch it, because they actually have taken a lot of time to make it very watchable, and they're still improving stuff, but it's actually, you're learning a lot of meta and tactics. In that you can apply in many games. Yes, you're not going to be the Twitch player, but how people are positioning, it is a team, a two-team, you know, type of game of multiple people playing together in different roles. So it actually is very informative, and I think a lot of people just watch it to, you know, get better at the game too.
I saw the founder of Epic Games, which is the company that makes Fortnite. That gentleman, he started Epic Games in his parents' basement, and recently it has been valued at $8 billion, so... He's doing okay.
You know, my mother told me that I was not going to gain anything by playing. And in my age,
you'll be living
Atari,
in my basement making video games.
Right. You can't. You don't have that argument anymore to get kids to go outside.
Well, like, Mom, I'm making $50,000.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be in Korea when StarCraft II was taken off. You know, you never amount to make anything. And then now, how many players are multimillionaires in Korea just from playing StarCraft? And actually, in Overwatch with bonus stuff, I would be surprised if there's quite a few players that are not making at least six figures this year for the first season. So, pretty good gig when you're, you know, 20 years old. So,
yeah, or 40.
Okay. Well, I know what I'm doing this weekend. I'm gonna watch some Fortnite because I haven't played that yet, and I actually haven't even played Overwatch.
I haven't either. So I feel like I need to find some person to teach me.
I'm just stuck in my MMO rut. I just am. Hey, I gave out the wrong phone number earlier. The 800 number to call for this new Sioux Falls studio has a new phone number.
Oh.
It's 800-852-0214. That's 800-852-0214. I was right on the text number. It's 956-7372 or 956-SDPB. And, you know, the most popular way is usually in the moment at sdpb.org is the way to get a hold of us. You can be a little bit more descriptive in that email if you'd like to and give us a thought to talk about or a problem you have, and we would love to talk about it. We need to step aside for a moment, and when we come back, we have some Amazon.com business to take care of. Several things in the news, but we're going to talk about some reviews on Amazon.com after this. And welcome back to In the Moment. It's Tech Radio today, and we've got CEO and co-founder of Lemonly, John T. Meyer, with us. Still spinning out the infographics up the street?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we've, you know, the big thing we've changed in the last 12 to 18 months is really evolving from just infographics and videos to now we just call ourselves, you know, visual storytelling, just creating content. It comes in so many formats and platforms nowadays. So you're not just taking this JPEG PDF infographic and slapping it on your website. You're also reformatting that so that it goes on social media, maybe printed into an 8.5 by 11 for the old school, you know, in-person meeting. Mm-hmm. Or even now we're starting to explore and this decent transition into Amazon. But what about telling that same story, but through audio? You know, we're here on the radio, and I know it's funny technology-wise because that feels like we're moving backwards. But application-wise, taking a story and telling it in the visual content, podcast, radio, or even the other kicker there is accessibility becoming a bigger and bigger issue online. So for folks who may be visually impaired, how could they can consume that story but through audio? Mm-hmm. So we're starting to really look at the way our content is formatted.
Audio is still huge. You know, from the convenience standpoint, you know, driving or on your way to work or whatever you're doing. That's why.
I don't know if I'd say it's still huge. Big. I feel like it's coming back, right? Like yeah. It maybe was slowly fading at the kind of the advent of social media, but it's definitely making its comeback.
It might be convenience too.
And yeah, allows you to, you can multitask with audio, whereas any visual ones, it's, you know, you can't drive.
You got things to watch. You got things to interact with. Yeah.
Yeah. And we talked about this before the show, but I would be willing to bet if anything you currently type with your fingers, you in a few years will just say instead. And I know that, you know, I find when I use Siri on my iPhone, or you probably have an Android, right? So Google Assistant, right? Is that what it's called? Mm-hmm. It's still a little awkward around people to be like, hey, Siri, call my wife. But that's what's going to happen. As human beings, we always default to the least amount of friction. And just saying something is so much easier.
What cracked the ice for you for starting to go the route with just speaking instead of actually typing? Because I'm at the awkward stage where it's still faster for me just to peck it out with my fingers.
Sure.
Or just, you know, I've got the little draw function on the keyboard so I can draw the words and it figures out what I'm saying.
I don't do that.
Yeah, and it's really fast. But it seems every time I try to use it, I get an error message back saying we can't do it at this time or try later. Yeah. I can't connect to the server. I get stumbling blocks in my way, so it never becomes a habit for me. What was the thing that made it convenient for you so you started doing it all the time?
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm fully there yet either. I think anytime I do a Siri and I'm like, call, I'll use her name, but Amy Colgan, who is my business partner. And sometimes it's like, Amy Bolgan, or like, which Amy did you mean? Because I have three different Amys in my phone book. And then I'm like, oh, Siri, fine, I'll just type it. So I'm not fully there, but I think I'm saying that I can see how it's going to be there. So the one big one I use it the most now is why I'm driving, because I don't ever want to text and drive. And mm-hmm. I feel like having a 2-year-old in the back seat has made me more aware of that. Because mm-hmm. I'll admit, I've texted and driven before. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to get better at that. But also, I think the way I start to see the value, and this probably sounds like TMI, but once I put an Echo Dot in the bathroom, I know we've talked about, and I know it sounds weird, but it's just more so morning routine. So like, I'll get my flash briefing from NPR. I'll get the weather, because sometimes, you know, Amazon's basically subsidizing. They're giving away these Echo Dot devices for $29. They're not making any money on them because they want us all to figure out how to use it, right, and adapt. And I kind of felt like when we had it in the kitchen, it was like, yeah, it was whatever there. Every once in a while, I'd play Jeopardy against it or whatever. But now I start to see that as a little bit of a... It's convenient.
So it's creeping into your spaces
slowly.
A little bit more.
Yeah,
so
I'm not
you're
there
starting
yet.
To use it more.
Not there yet, but I think I can just see it and I see the future and I say, yeah, there's no reason that won't be that to me does not seem like a bold claim to say that we won't be texting as like typing.
I have a similar parallel in that I had an Alexa that was sitting in my kitchen and I only used it when people would come over and I would say, what's the weather and that sort of stuff. You know, I didn't. But same for me. I actually, in the last probably 2 months, have started doing voice stuff more because I have a dot. Well, actually, I've got a couple of dots now in different areas of the house. And like you said, it's less friction. I don't have to walk to the kitchen to talk about it.
Yep.
I happen to be in my bedroom. I can tell Alexa what to do. And I have started setting up routines, which I actually just wasn't familiar with before. And you can say, you know, one of them is, okay, Alexa, good night. And, you know, my lights all shut off except for the bedroom, which then dims. And then there's some specific music that plays. And,
cool.
And, you know, when you get into that habit or that routine, which is what they're called, it becomes much easier to do. Otherwise, I was struggling to sure. find a use for it,
yeah.
right?
And that's fascinating because we are obviously, as human beings, creatures of habit. And there's a really powerful book called The Power of Habit. And it talks about how every habit is built by the same trigger, routine, reward. And so, you know, when you want to break a bad habit or start a good habit, focus on either the trigger or the reward, because then you'll just do the act of doing the thing. So for you, it's like certain time hits. It triggers, it says, hey, good night, Amos, and the lights fade. Then you're like, yeah, I probably should go to bed versus, mm-hmm. you know, play Fortnite for the next 3 hours or something like that.
Yeah.
And so then you start to have these triggers, and then you follow the routine.
And it took a little preparation for that. I had to, you know, go through the figuring it out, how to make it work, what I wanted to do. But once I got past that or got through that, then there became a reward for it. So
I guess I'm waiting for the thing. So Dragon Dictate and a whole bunch of other things have been around for talk to text as far as at work and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just haven't found the convenient way of working that into my habit yet.
Sure. Yeah.
So I need to do that, and then I will probably be a lot more accepting of the other things.
Yeah.
I'm assuming.
Well, I wish Joel was here because I'm talking about using one right now and still trying to kind of figure out how to use this Alexa dot. And I know he's got several in his house, and I know his, I think, 8-year-old, I can't remember how old she is, she uses it, and, you know, he's really a pro at it. And so I think you're starting to see you can really optimize and create a lot of less create a lot less friction.
What did he say last show, 14 yet, or 18?
A lot.
In his house?
Yeah. I'll just say several, but I know. Yeah, I know
It's gone.
I will agree with you. I'm less likely to talk to Alexa when there's people around, unless you're showing it out. You know, I wouldn't use it for a routine that I would normally do on my own.
I don't mind saying that around my family, but like in the office, I think it still would be weird to be like, hey, call my wife, and everyone, not that it matters, but I don't know. That part I have to.
But it's disruptive, you know, in those situations.
We've all seen where people are walking through the local shopping mart and they're shouting into their phones, and it's like, come on.
Well, and I think you also see part of that voice command stuff is because you have a Bluetooth headset you have over the years.
I do,
you know, I would put myself in the camp of people who made fun of people who wear Bluetooth headsets. Now I have my Apple AirPods in my ears often. It's the same damn thing, but it's Apple, right? And so it's cool. And now they're making, like, even so a little bit in Sioux Falls, but when I travel, I'm seeing tons more of those AirPods in people's ears. And so now then you're not even like holding your phone up. You're just tapping, hey, directions to coffee shop or.
And I much prefer that to somebody that's got somebody on speakerphone on their phone.
Oh, yeah.
And they're yelling at them going through the checkout line. And it's like,
yeah, it's like taking a picture with your
headset,
iPad,
please. Yeah,
we already talked about that.
When's that going to become socially unacceptable? Because it needs to.
You just got to give them enough glares, right?
Fairly soon. Well, we were going to talk about Amazon this segment, and I think we still are. But the one thing that I wanted to throw out to you folks, NPR broke a story this week, and it wasn't really breaking a story, but they talked to a young man, a teenager, that went out and bought a product. He was apparently had a rifle or just got a new gun, and he needed a gun lock. He has some younger siblings in the house and wanted a good one, so he went to Amazon and read the reviews, found one that had glowing reviews, 5-star reviews, bought it, and found out that the combination, nothing worked. It was junk, and it kind of turned him off. And the flip to the story is there's a big story in this, but by the end of the story you learn that he's now doing paid reviews on Amazon.com, which, by the way, is not kosher with the company.
So who's paying him to do this?
This would be the actual product, the manufacturers or the sellers. He tells you how the whole scam works in the NPR story. I can link that up to our Facebook page here, or you can simply go out to NPR.org. But he tells you how it's done, and he rues the fact that he does it now. He doesn't like it that people can game the system, but he does it. It's makes him a couple hundred bucks a month as a teenager. He does it, but this is not good for Amazon.
Yeah,
this is deteriorating their, I guess, brand, isn't it? If I come to them, that's the reason I really started using Amazon was reviews. I needed people to recommend good products to me.
It certainly dilutes the value of those because, and this is interesting, just this weekend, a friend of mine and I were looking at some reviews for a video security camera, and they seemed questionable because many of them were in poor English, but in the same poor English over and over and over again. Mm. And it was definitely a system that was coming from overseas. And so you sort of have to question, okay, well, maybe a lot of people from that country purchased them, or maybe they just hire their own folks to go in and put in reviews. It certainly does, like I said, dilute the validity of those reviews. And if you're searching by, I want something that's got 4 stars or more, how do you trust those 4 stars are legit stars?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, Amazon started with books, not because Bezos thought that books was this huge market, but it was the easiest thing to move and ship, and he felt like it was pretty ripe for disruption, which proved to be true. But part of really what was the backbone of growing Amazon was the reviews and going there and knowing, okay, is this a book I would read? Like, what type of people enjoyed this book? Who doesn't like this book? And so, yeah, I would say, does it hurt the brand? Yeah, it probably hurts the brand. I think, yeah, I suppose that's the same thing. When I was thinking about just the authority and the credibility, which certainly does mean the brand. But now, I mean, Amazon now is just like the everything store, right? So you go there for whatever, toilet paper, which I don't need to read reviews on toilet paper. I understand what it does. But I think, I think there are things to certainly watch out for when you are buying products.
And, you know, they had tried to combat this by doing the verified purchaser. You know, to log in with the same account that you used. But if they're refunding the particular reviewer's money, are they really a verified purchaser? I mean, obviously they bought the product, but they got their money back and they're being compensated for their time and effort. And the other question is, I haven't read or heard the story. Does he ever give negative reviews?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Or is he paid to provide positive
reviews?
He's
paid to provide positive reviews. And on Amazon's side of the story, they talk about how this is the fake reviews or whatever you want to say, whatever you want to call them, are like a minuscule percentage of the actual amount of reviews out there. They're very,
I believe it,
very point whatever percent of all the reviews. And they've got some tech installed to help them identify the ones that are fake. So he talks about how, well, you wait a few days after you buy it to review it. Otherwise, if you review it too fast, it's a red flag for the, you know, for the big Amazon bot that comes through and sweeps. So they're, you know, it's like the folks are trying to outsmart the bots that are written by the folks that are trying to outsmart the people that are trying to scam them.
I was going to say, it seems like an AI issue. I mean, Facebook's going through the same thing, right, with fake accounts and fake news.
Boy, did they ever this week.
Yeah. Well, Twitter also put the hammer down, I think, a week ago. I'm sure if you're on Twitter, you all probably lost some followers, but they can't remember the total amount.
But they weren't I mean, that's
exactly.
That's the deal. They weren't good ones anymore. No, so you're better off without them. So.
And all the mega tech companies are dealing with the same issue, and Facebook's really trying to use artificial intelligence to combat it. I'm sure Amazon does too. We were talking, we're making an infographic right now in process, so I don't think I can mention the client, but it's a personal finance blog. And they said, the infographic is about, the article is about things to look for when buying products on Amazon, because not just fake reviews, sometimes you can have like rip-off products, just like the black market. And so they said 3 things that were illustrating these for the company, but if the logos or packaging aren't quite right, you know, if you compare... I think cosmetics was one of the products that they say happens a lot. You compare your lotion or lipstick compared to the product. It might look real close, but slightly off. So look for the logo and packaging. If the price is significantly lower than usual, and the example there, they talked about a lot of Apple accessories, chargers, cords, dongles. Most of them on Amazon might be, we'll say, $20, $19.95. And if this one is $8.95, that's a little bit of a red flag if it's so significantly. And then to Amos's point, same with the comments, if the feedback or the reviews contain multiple misspellings, and often you'll see consistency in the misspellings, what you're saying, when they're doing these multiple reviews. So those are three things to look for if you're buying a product, and it might seem too good to be true.
One thing I'll just put in there, this is kind of romantic. I've seen this on a few of the reviews of different products. One thing to just pay in mind, especially on the price, and this, and from the reviews, just be confident this could happen, is that certain merchants use Amazon for fulfillment. So basically, you kind of trust Amazon more. So basically, the merchant ships their product to Amazon, and Amazon warehouses actually ship it out to you. In a few cases, when there's a lot of different merchants offering the same product, it's been rumored and people say that Amazon's mixing all those different vendor stuff into one bin and just sending out, and that fake stuff has been slipping through the gate, so to speak, because of those common poolings of the same product, because the product looks exactly the same, it's packaged exactly the same, it's everything the same, but it's actually a fake. One merchant puts the fakes in, offers at a lower price, but other merchants, you know, you can randomly get that fake product. So that's something to kind of be aware of, just in case it happens. Amazon will, you know, you can return to Amazon and get it. But Amazon's been fooled a couple of times in that fulfillment by Amazon, so be careful of that.
So and another comparison, another analogy here. Facebook's launching a digital digital literacy library to help folks, young people. They talk about internet responsibility in the current age of misinformation. They're developing this so people can navigate better, and that's really back to what you're talking about. Your infographic and your company wants to bring that literacy up to be able to spot these problems.
Yeah, I've been saying this for years. When we way back on Nine Clouds, when we would teach companies about social media, and now you're seeing it with children too. And if we're talking about audio, you know, if keyboarding hasn't already gone away at the elementary school level, I don't know. Maybe it has. My guess is it has, or it will, because either these kids already know how to type because they've been typing on an iPad or a device since they were young, or they won't need to type because they'll use their voice. To me, I think keyboarding, what I took as elementary school keyboarding, will be replaced by digital literacy, or how what's appropriate to share and what don't you share, or how do you determine whether a source is credible? I mean, I think we learned that through school already, but now with the era we live in, that's something we need to emphasize again, and finding credible sources and learning as a 12-year-old what you should or shouldn't share. So anyway, I'm just piling on that. I think it's a great idea that Facebook's doing it. Granted, absolutely, they have their own incentive why to do it, but.
Yeah, absolutely. We come back, we're going to go around the table, talk about some more topics with our guests today. Again, way to get a hold of us is our phone number, 800-852-0214. And that email address, again, is inthemoment@sdpb.org. And welcome back to the third half of In the Moment Tech Radio today. It's a lovely day outside, and we're enjoying the tech indoors today at the Sioux Falls studio. We gathered the experts to talk. We have John T. Meyer here from Lemonly. It says right on your t-shirt, Lemonly.
Today I did wear the shirt, yeah.
Amos Aesop.
I have to remember where I work.
Exigent. He is their chief security officer. Welcome aboard, Aesop. Or Aesop, Amos.
Mom works
and,
too.
Three have been called worse, right? And Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierre. Jeffrey joins us today to talk about Jeffrey's expertise is gaming and networking and security and other things. Guys, I got a quick text I want to get out of the way here. Why am I getting so many out-of-state phone calls? They never leave a message, and if I answer, there's never anyone there. Also, then the second part is, car warranty and credit card calls. They've done the do not call list, the website, a couple of times, and they just call back from a different number. Amos, what's the deal with nobody answering when you pick up?
So most of the time, that's going to be a technology glitch on their end. So those things are all done through robo-dialers, right? Systems that there's a bank of people who sit a lot of times, frankly, from home, working from home. A system calls those numbers, and when someone picks up, and you sometimes will hear this as well, there's a slight delay because the system then connects them to an operator. And that's used in legitimate areas, you know. So in the credit card industry, if you're making phone calls for collections and that sort of stuff. But it's also used for these less than legitimate areas too. And if you pick up and nobody's there, it's probably a technology issue in that they couldn't get you connected to a quote unquote operator in the amount of time required before it hangs up. Because it's not going to sit there and waste resources waiting for something that might not happen, so it'll just hang up on you.
Okay. The second question, the do not call list, is it just other people that are calling, so you've already sort of reported and blocked?
The do not call list is awesome for those that adhere to it. If you don't adhere to it, then nothing, you know, it doesn't matter. And it only is going to be a problem for those companies that get reported. And if they're not legitimate or you've got no way to find them, you know, the numbers that they're using are spoofed, or, you know, for me, I get a lot of phone calls that appear to be coming from Sioux Falls cell phones.
Yes.
And it's because those numbers are easily spoofed. It's not actually coming from that number. I guess it could
be. These aren't even robocalls, but like sales calls to our Lemonly phone number using a 605 number. And I'm assuming it's because there's just a lot of 605 numbers available, given our population. So these companies are buying these more localized or regional numbers, and it's annoying because we use Google Voice. So these numbers come in, and I have to answer it because it could be a client, or it turns out to be a sales call. And so I can't block the callers, but what I do is just my iPhone, I have a person contact called Do Not Answer. Mm-hmm. And every time I get a new number, I just save it in that list. And so the do not answer person has, you know, a dozen phone numbers.
And this sort of ties in, we were talking before the show about the Reddit issue, where Reddit got hacked, and that was because they had two-factor authentication, which is SMS or text messaging, basically. Not directly related, but part of it is that these numbers are portable. And that's why SMS texting for second-factor authentication is not as secure, but it also means that somebody in Georgia can pick up a Sioux Falls phone number with no problems.
Sure.
You know, they say, here's the list of numbers we have available, and maybe you do it for legitimate reasons. I know there are times where, you know, this is dating me a little bit, back when long distance was a thing, right? You would get a cell phone number that was in the same area code or in the same local calling area as the people you called the most, so you didn't have long distance charges. And because of that and the ease of portability, anybody can get really, you know, we could go get an Anchorage phone number if we wanted
to. I mean, Google Voice, we use Google Voice for Lemonly because we want to have a 605 number, but it's free.
Yep. But when you did that, they gave you the choice, right?
I could choose any state, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you mentioned Reddit, and that's actually an interesting tale that maybe we should talk a little bit about today. So one of the... is it a premier website on the internet? I think it's one of the most used, certainly.
Is that a classification, or what do you mean?
Well, yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, Juggernaut or Titan or... a company large enough that you would expect very, very high standards of security.
Oh, yeah. You'd hope, yeah.
Let's just go that far.
Yeah.
It is, for a lot of folks, it is the front page of the internet for them. They go there for jokes and funny pictures and whatever, but they also go there for tech support, talk about their games. It's just about anything you can think of. And they had a very sophisticated hack happen to them where they actually, it wasn't a spearfish, it wasn't anything like that, but so their employees are required to have two-factor authentication, which means, what does that mean, Amos? How many ways, there's those YubiKeys or there's other hardware keys, that's one form of authentication.
So we talk about it we could talk about it as two-factor or multi-factor authentication.
Okay.
Basically, what you need is two things. One is something you know, which is going to be your password, right? Mm-hmm. What everybody does every day. And the other thing is either something you have, like a YubiKey or some sort of fob or something like that, or something you are, which would be like a fingerprint or an iris scan.
Sure.
And that would be the second thing. You don't ever want it to be two things you know or whatever, because obviously those things are stealable, are able to be stolen. And so having a second factor authentication, in this case for Reddit, they were doing SMS, which is text messaging. They would put in their username and password. They would get a text message from their provider that says, enter this extra code. And then because that comes to your cell phone, you have to have that phone with you, right, in order to be able to get
then
in.
Then we'll so let you in. Yep.
Right. So in theory, I guess, you know, if someone steals their phone and knows their password, then they've got the keys to the kingdom. But that's, you know, that's highly unlikely, but certainly possible.
So if you're going to do two-factor, which I always do the same and tell my employees Slack, like, make sure you use the two-factor. Mm-hmm. What do you recommend? What's
so,
the ideal
so
combo?
SMS for, and this is a huge debate right now, even on Reddit itself, SMS is a, for the average person doing average stuff on the internet, is a great secure way to, I should say more secure way of doing things than not having second factor.
Better than nothing.
It's better than nothing, absolutely. We don't want to tell people to stop doing it because it doesn't work, because that's just not the case. In this case, Reddit is a high value target, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're going after it, and I haven't read a definitive source that said this is what happened, but it could be as simple as porting your number or that particular person's number to my phone and having that text intercepted. There's also some SSS7 signaling, which is telephone SMS is kind of insecure in the way that it travels across phone networks. Much harder to do. It's more likely to be a number porting issue. But going with a third-party service that uses more encryption and uses apps on your phone is a better way to do it, because that can't be can't be stolen.
Yeah, we probably should mention this also. Google just put out an article recently that they haven't had a successful phishing attack since, for about a year and a half. It's, instead of passwords, they've now gone to a physical USB device. If you do not have the physical USB device, you cannot log into any computer or any Google account if you're a Google employee. And since then, it has stopped a lot of this kind of stuff just cold. And they haven't had an issue since. And you know Google's, you know, being attacked all the time as a very high-value target. So, and then the other thing is the NIST government standards for multi-factor have delisted SMS and phone calls as valid reasons because of these security issues. So hardware token or app smartphone tokens work and are secure, are not interceptable like the SMS. Just be aware, it's kind of moving in that direction. You're going to have some kind of app on the phone.
So my Google Authenticator app that I have,
yeah, I use that a lot.
Is
yeah.
good.
Is a much is a more secure method than the SMS second factor authentication.
Yeah, let's break that down, because I'm not the security guy, but it's an app called Authenticator put on by Google. You'll have an app that you'll be using, the app that you want to log into, and it'll say, "Oh, enter your 6-digit code," and you go over to this Authenticator app. And how long is that? About 30 seconds or so?
Ish, yeah.
This little clock ticks, and there's a 6-digit number. At the end of every 30 seconds, it resets to a new 6-digit number.
And some apps, like the ones I use for work and stuff, they can actually do now what's called push notifications, where when I log in, actually my phone will light up, and there's an encrypted connection, and say, do you accept this? And if I press no, it records it as a fraudulent, someone trying to log on as me, and then also sends out a security alert. So it can be even easier than using a code.
All right. We have a quick phone call we're going to take.
And, let's do it.
Let's go ahead and do it. Caller, you're on. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm getting the signal over there. It says no.
Okay, well.
We lost the caller.
Hello, caller. Are you with us?
Yeah. Hi, yeah. So a few years ago, Blizzard came out with kind of a key fob. And so that key fob was kind of like an RNG that allowed you to do a second-party authentication. So why is it so hard for organizations like Reddit that are high-value targets to not have these options?
And I missed the first part of your call there. You said Blizzard?
Yeah, the Blizzard Authenticator. I have actually a couple of them. It's a hardware token fob, which is the most common kind of two-factor for many years before smartphones really took off. Blizzard now has their mobile authenticator, which is the same thing, except it's a cell phone app. Same thing as the Google Authenticator, and it works very well. The reason why you see a lot of that stuff is expense. We do two-factor here. It's not cheap, and SMS is the cheapest of all. So is the phone call, right? There's no cost involved. Some of the apps are free, some are not. Someone's paying for that, right? In this case, Blizzard had so many issues with people hacking World of Warcraft accounts and stealing people's gear and spending so much money on recovery operations to get their customers back up. I mean, some say thousands and millions of support hours, that they could justify paying $5, $6 for that little token to send out. So it many times SMS is just kind of the cheap way out, and it's not the best way.
John, that answer your question?
Thank you. Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks for the call today. We appreciate it.
It did come as a surprise to most in the security industry that Reddit, again, a high-value target, would be utilizing a known insecure second factor. You know, the same places, if you work for a bank, you wouldn't use that. If you work for a government agency, you wouldn't use that. If you're using it for your Gmail, absolutely you use it because it's free, it's convenient, it's handy, and you're one of a billion people out there who are doing the same thing. Again, if you're using Gmail for, you know, some pretty intense high value things, then you wouldn't use it anymore. But just for everyday purposes, it's better than nothing.
Not a super easy feat, though, to do. I mean, they had to have some really good information on these people to get that phone number ported over to them. They probably on the dark web, there was probably some information about them. They probably knew the last four of their social, if not their whole social. They probably knew their address. Mm-hmm. And as long as you have some of that information, you can call the credit card or the credit card company, the phone company, and say, send that number my way, and they do it, and that's apparently what happened in this case. We'll know more probably by the next show, but not an easy thing to do. Well, guys, it's been enlightening. What a great show. The hour's been flying by, and that is unfortunately all the time we have for the show. Thanks, our panelists, John T. Meyer, Amos Aesop, Jeff Litterick. Thanks, guys, for coming in and being with us today. SDPB is there with you always with our app or at sdpb.org. Go there and click on listen. And today is Gail Gross' last day with the Friends of South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Gail has been a friend of mine and for many decades. And Gail, I wish you all the best and thank you so much for your behind-the-scenes work in our membership office over the past 41 years. So thank you, Gail, and it's kind of an important day. It's our last day with the Friends. Anyway, folks, have a great weekend, and we will see you in 2 weeks.